On this day, we are more than usually aware of the suffering of all beings and of the potential for all of us, for any of us, to cause harm. This practice, here is my thesis sentence for the talk. This practice is not about you. And it is utterly essential that you yourself do it. Before we turn to Shunryu Suzuki, let me remind us from this piece from Rod Anderson. The goal of Zazen is the liberation of all living beings from suffering. This practice is not about you, and it's utterly essential you do it. I'm going to read a little bit from the Beyond Consciousness chapter of Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind. And I want to say that it was difficult for me to find a way to use this book to point to some of what I wanted to point to. And this is a shadow of Zen practice. Nonetheless, our true nature is beyond our conscious experience. Beyond consciousness actually exists, and it is there that we have to establish the foundation of our practice. But if you try to stop your mind or go beyond your conscious activity, if you try to stop your mind or go beyond your conscious activity, that will only be another burden. Emptiness of mind is not a state of mind. Emptiness of mind is not a state of mind, but the original essence of mind. Buddhist teaching is to point to life itself existing beyond consciousness in our pure original mind. I might add, in this pure original mind that is not ours. We don't do this practice to have some experience of consciousness. We don't do this practice to sit in Zazen and have some experience and not some other experience. Even if that some other experience aligns with our idea of holy. It is not about sitting and feeling spacious, compassionate, broad, wise, or even okay. those things may come. But in essence, there is, as Bodhidharma says, nothing holy about it. It is the entirety of life. And on the other hand, let us pause to realize that in fact, the entirety of life is very holy indeed. But this is not dependent on what's going on in my mind. One of the great gifts that Western Zen has brought to the ongoing century by century, country by country, culture by culture transformation of the language of Zen, the tools of Zen, the emphasis of Zen, one of the great gifts that our culture has brought is bringing a psychologized worldview to Dharma practice. This psychologized worldview is so pervasive to the way we see things in this culture that it's hard for us to imagine meeting the Dharma through any other lens. But this is a new development, this way of talking and meeting our psychologized view of self and mind. And this is a great gift. The shadow of it is that we come to imagine mistakenly that our psychological experience, or tweaking our psychological experience, or adjusting or having some psychological experience and not some other psychological experience, is the essence of this practice. And this is not so. The essence of practice is the liberation of all living beings from suffering. And the goal is exactly the same as the practice. This practice is not nothing. This practice is a transformative, life-saving, life-giving thing. It is not nothing, but it isn't measured by how it's going for you. And in fact, letting go of the continual obsessive, compulsive need to discern, how's it going for me right now? Is this good? Am I doing it okay? How about now? Is this as good as the moment before? How's this period of Zazen? Is my Zen practice progressing? Am I becoming a better person? Am I doing... This is not... Those things are a manifestation of the very causes of suffering. Fixation on the importance of those. But in fact, we practice with, as, and on behalf of all beings. This practice can help us touch the okayness of this one thing that is the messed up universe and self as it is. But it is not about just sitting here and resting in that okayness. We have to get up. We have to act in the service of our bodhisattva vows. We have to actualize our bodhisattva vows. And it may be the case that touching the okayness that is present in this moment is exactly the life-sustaining medicine we need to be able to come forth and behold the cries of the world, to be able to not compulsively look away from the suffering of people who are not us. This practice is utterly essential. And whatever happens for you is not the center of it. One person in the Sangha told me that she told the Sangha in our sharing circle that she was beginning to see how her long game was paying off. I asked her what this long game was, and she said, bringing her attention to just trying in each encounter to be a good person. Bodhisattva practice is a long game. Saving all beings is a long game. I want to make sure before I hand this to Steve to point in some different directions that I point to this piece that we read from the Dhammapada from Shakyamuni Buddha himself in An Unending Truth. That person insulted me, hit me, beat me, robbed me. For those who don't brood on this, hostility is stilled. Hostility is stilled. Stilling hostility is of utmost importance. Stilling action in the cause of justice is the very opposite of Dharma. Being able to take urgent action from a place not of hostility. This is what we are practicing. Steve will make some other links for us.
So I'm hoping to say a few words about this life-giving medicine of finding okayness in the midst of a great struggle and difficulty. But before I do that, I want to point to a couple of other things. So, I have really been struck these past many weeks with finding myself in a new reality where people seem to feel like it's okay to openly hate other people and do terrible things. And I have felt quite unprepared and powerless to meet this new world that seems to have suddenly arisen. But as someone pointed out yesterday after Melissa's lovely talk, I think it was Esther. The world has always been filled with great suffering. People starving and people killing each other. And none of this is actually new. This is an ongoing part of this world of human beings for some reason. It is not quite understandable by me how such evil can come to be in the world. And I know, you know, that it all springs from this greed, anger, and ignorance. But someone else was questioning. I think it was Edward. Why do we come here and do this practice in the face of all that's going on in the world right now? Shouldn't we be out there in the world standing up and doing something? And of course, I think the answer to that is yes. But I worry about my first reactions. And I see this suffering world polarizing into opposing camps, and one side doing terrible things and inspiring the other side to do terrible things, and so on and so on and so on. And no place we can actually stand, no way we can actually be certain that we are right. But still, we must find a way to act, because there are certain fundamental things, I think, that can be agreed on as being important. So one thing that has been coming up for me quite a lot in recent weeks is these four commitments that are part of our jukai or precepts ceremony. So people, when in Boundless Way, when they decide that they would like to receive the precepts and wear one of these roksus around their neck, taking these four commitments is a part of this ceremony. And these four commitments came from a parliament of world religions, where leaders of all different religions came together and were looking for a set of principles that they could all agree on. And I would like to read them for you, because they have been so important to me recently. I commit myself to a culture of nonviolence and reverence for life. I commit myself to a culture of solidarity and a just economic order. I commit myself to a culture of acceptance and a life based on truthfulness. And I commit myself to a culture of equal rights and partnership among all people. And I think this, for me, has been, particularly recently, a very important foundation of what it means to be a part of Boundless Way Zen, and a part of Boundless Way Zen that we can be proud of, I think. And in our struggle to show our commitment to the way, at the Greater Boston Zen Center, where some of us sit, Josh and myself and Laura and many of us, we decided to put these four commitments up on our front door as a statement of who we are. And this nonviolence. First of all, do no harm. In the face of people doing such great harm to others, how can I avoid adding to the suffering in my conviction that I know what to do and I know who the bad people are? And of course, there's action that must be taken, right? I mean, people are doing things that must be resisted. But is there a way that I can move in the world in a way that will minimize the harm, will not escalate this cycle of hatred and greed and violence, and particularly this delusive certainty that seems to be running rampant throughout, not just here, but the world. Scary developments all over. So I think we need to have principles that we can stand on. I think this is a good beginning, and there's many more. But I feel that besides this action that we of course must do, it's important to get in touch with my motivations, and I want to read a little bit from the piece that we chanted early this morning by Shahaku Okumura, "Those Who Greatly Realize Delusions Are Buddhas." He says, "No matter how hard we practice, our motivation for practice is always based in some amount of self-centeredness. The act of truly seeing this self-centeredness is itself Buddha. To awaken to the reality of our delusion is itself Buddha. To realize delusion is to be a Buddha. Awakening to the incompleteness of our practice and returning to our path is the meaning of repentance, of atonement." And when I come and sit on this cushion, the extent of my self-centeredness and delusion becomes much more clear to me than it normally does. And I think this is a very important thing. And I love that he says here, and this originates with Dogen, simply to realize my delusion is to be a Buddha. So important that I need to be able to see my delusion. Bring my awareness to my motivations and activities. And just bringing this awareness is its own action. So, both on the cushion and off, looking at my self-centeredness and my delusion. And not even so much seeing through it, but seeing it, I think makes quite a difference. But there's something else that brings me to this cushion. And I feel so inadequate and broken sometimes, and I see the suffering of the world, and I think, you know, what can possibly be done about this? And I just want to avoid the whole mess. And I come here and practice my zazen, facing the realities of what is going on, both inside me and in the world around me. And my personal experience is that by doing this, by resisting the urge to turn away or to fix, that it is actually possible for me to occasionally catch a glimpse of the deep oneness in this universe that holds us. That my small mind and others' small mind are a part of this whole. And when I catch these glimpses of this deep oneness of reality, I have this arising of compassion for the world, and this sense of, in spite of all the troubles and difficulties, there is an okayness, that this absolute reality is manifesting itself exactly in the form of how things are. And this is Buddha's life. Our problems are not the problem. Our problems are the place where we meet our life. This is how the life of the whole universe is expressed in the form of me and others. And I find great medicine in this okayness in the middle of such great pain and struggle. Thank you.
So, please sit comfortably, and please be invited to come forth as yourself in our Dharma dialogue. Questions, observations, reflections, challenges.
Thank you very much, Josh and Steve, for your talk. And I also want to express my thanks and appreciation for the liturgy service that we did. Fear, fear arising, dread arising, all about what may come, and I don't know what's to come, but fear and dread arising, and what is really alive for me, along with that, is my intense gratitude for our teachers and all of us, for Sangha. I can't imagine trying to bear this alone. And having just such a safe place to say, I am so scared. I dread what may arise. And I wish it were different, just to be able to give voice to that in a room filled with my Dharma teachers and Dharma brothers and sisters. Such a gift.
Thank you for expressing it. You know, the capacity to be able to name it, fear and dread, could be sadness, could be anger, and not have it be corrected or fixed, because the Dharma power, the energy that we were talking about yesterday, actually comes from what's here. And so anger, fear, dread, sadness, all these things we try to avoid, in this practice, there's room for them. And then the energy of this gets transformed, and the stepping forward. So it's like, you know, what Josh was saying about, it's not about you, and you have to do it. It starts about us. It always, you know, as the other text, Zadok Gomorrah, says, it always has a bit of self-centeredness. Because where else do we start? So we start with, whoa. And then, whoa, and it's less personal, and then turns into action. That's the progression of it. And we don't have to do it by ourselves. And it's your duty to do it as a bodhisattva. It's your duty to allow this energy to take you forward.
I want to just append one additional name that we can notice is arising for us, and it would be grief. Mm. And the Zen thing to do with grief is to grieve.
I'm leaving today, and when I flew in, then I was greeted on the video screens by Obama saying, "Welcome to our country, we are all one, welcome in, let's all be friends," or something like this. And then change is so real. Now I'm flying home today, and I don't know what's next, if I have the chance to come next. But I feel so empowered. And inspired to take action, and this that you can actually feel okay, that the okayness that you talked about, Steve, so many people, they don't know that it's actually possible. and in my country, it's nobody knows that a place like this exists, where it's actually political, spiritual action, like deep, deep wisdom, and such a home. I'm inspired to bring this forward, and it's, I don't know how.
Thank you. It's not for nothing that we call it Boundless Way.
And I'm really touched by your observation of that so many people don't know this okayness. And let us pause to reflect that our being familiar with this okayness has nothing to do with our good personness. It has nothing to do, we didn't earn it, we didn't create it, we didn't cause it. It is quite literally undeserved. And it is only because we have had the privilege to be able to set aside time, to be able to get here, pay for a plane ticket, pay for gas, take time off for work, to be able to familiarize ourselves with this. And we owe such a karmic debt to everyone else because of that.
And I think that this okayness is not trademark copyright Zen.
And
I think that human beings all over the world connect to this and know this, and it is a resource and so important as we go out in the world, that not just an idea, but that we know, and this allows us to meet whatever comes. And certainly the great privilege to encounter the Dharma, to study and practice. Yeah.
But what I feel like the okayness is like a byproduct. And for me now, I feel such a great responsibility. Taking action and come forward.
And I want to say that the action starts right here, on the cushion. It is easy to make this distinction. All right, I'm really winding up here, and then I'm going to go out and take action. That there is no wind up. That there is the action of our zazen, the manifesting of our chanting and our great heart. There's nothing different we have to do outside. Right? So we practice here, we meet this impossible moment, we meet our impossible self in all of our terrible guises, and we practice here, and we practice sitting in the car going to the airport, and we practice waiting in line and giving talks, whatever we're called to do. This is a life of action. Yeah, and you know that. Thank you.
This life of action, and thinking of Laura saying the other night that as bodhisattvas we become unique bodhisattvas along the way, and Melissa saying that energetic, I don't remember the exact words, but that energetic coming forth, I see it, we see it, I speak for myself, in the natural world all the time. It's, you know, it's the spiders in a corner, it's the seasons changing, it's like nothing new is happening. And when I think of really individual actions that are happening, you know, like soon the monarchs are going to start stirring. What makes them stir? The sunlight, the seasons, God knows what. And that, I feel like that subtle, small little stirring, flowers being brought through the back door today, like, you know, I love that you said it's, there's no revving up, because I don't have the energy to rev up. I just rev for the last 50 years, and I'm and so I consider everyone here the same way I consider the boil of ants that comes out of the rocks on the edge of my wall, and like we all just continue along, and there's, of course, so much more.
Well expressed and well named.
And I think you're pointing to something so important, Joanne, that if we come forward in this dynamic way and it has opposition in it, it actually falters. And so this is a coming forward in alignment, just like the butterflies and the ants do. This is, and it's easier to do that. So we were talking yesterday about how everyone has something unique to do, and we all have many talents, and what is it going to be for each one of us? It doesn't have to look like anybody else. And to find that alignment with our true heart, the energy of our grief, our all the other stuff that's arising, and then naturally going forward. To hide takes a lot of energy. To turn away, to say, no, not this. In Zen, we say, yes, this, over and over and over again. So thank you for pointing that out.
Okay, go ahead.
What I'm also hearing is that in a way we can't go wrong, right? That things are unfolding and unfolding as they need to, and maybe the way that they unfold is that we stand in opposition and it's painful, and that this is not necessarily out, you know, like we've dropped off the way, that this is yet again a manifestation of what is. And yet it's... part of what is that we find ourselves called to look for that way of non-opposition, to align ourselves. So again, we sort of can't go wrong. We're following the past of a path of least resistance either way. So we just go forward. That's what I heard from you anyway.
Yeah.
Well,
go ahead, Judge.
From this place of non-opposition, sometimes what we do there is oppose injustice or something.
It reminds me, one of the secrets in an organization when you ask for volunteers is to ask people to do what they love. So, like, if I call Fran up and said, Fran, will you help me think about the garden? Right? And so, how do we find that activity for ourselves that is the, of course I want to do that? You know, that aligning not with how I think someone else told me I should do it, but what is that path of no resistance, or the path where the heart leaps up and says, please, can I help with the garden? Right? That's the place of natural energy. We're not, oh boy, I've got to go out and, you know, be in the garden again. You know, the garden of the universe is calling us, the wild and terrible and wonderful garden, and how to find our true way, the true heart leaping that wants to meet the world.
And I want to go back to something else that that Josh pointed out in the wonderful talk you both gave. Our privilege is very important here, because I keep having the image of not just people in our country who don't have choices about what to do and the capacity to take the time off and make arrangements to be able to sit here. In a way, what we're developing on the cushion, and I say that in a very wide way, is this capacity to meet, to know, to go forward. And there are times in people's lives, in the way human beings are together in community, that things happen where we can't sit back and consider what we're going to do, because things get very, very intense. So if you're suddenly in the middle of a riot, a bomb drops, a terrorist comes, you don't get to sit and go, what is my thing to do now? How can I fit into... the work that we've been doing is to come forward immediately. And, you know, we've seen that all over the world with in war zones and terrorist attacks and refugees, or people who come forward and help without thinking. You know, I think about the marathon bombing and how people came forward. Many people ran away screaming, but other people ran towards. What can I do? This is, to me, what a bodhisattva is. So sometimes we just don't have a choice. We just don't have a choice. And so this develops our capacity for not having to think about what's right, but really find our way to be. And if we're in the middle of that situation and one of the injured or the dying, that's full practice at that point, too. There's, as Kate was saying, there's nothing outside of it. Everything is it. And this is what we get to know through our privilege, and we have to use that. May it not be so. May we somehow avoid any of these things, and yet we know that we're not protected anymore. We've never, as Esther pointed out yesterday, human beings have never been protected. Somebody asked me about the precepts recently, and I always talk about how, you know, in the Buddha's day, people kept doing these things that caused harm, and so the Buddha would say, "Let's not do this one anymore." You know, and it, really, people killed 2,600 years ago. Now, yes, people kill. People kill. Let's not do that, right? That's it. So seems so sensible, and yet. And maybe with that, we'll go back to
saving
our
all
privileged, our privileged capacity to sit with everything.